Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You know? What's today? I just kind of want to know right away today. Sure. What are we doing?
We're talking about parachute failures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like my worst nightmare?
Pretty much, yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, I've got two pretty intense stories for you today. But before we jump in, I wanted to let you know that bonus episode number 52 is out now, and the poll for bonus episode number 53 should be up soon. So if you like voting on stories you want to hear and getting a ton of bonus content, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast.
And of course, never an ad to be seen.
So true. But without further ado, do you want to get into talking about some terrifying parachute failures?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Okay, great.
Imagine trying to go skydiving after this episode. This isn't the first one we've done either.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure plenty of people will hear this and then go skydiving afterward.
I know, but I'm just saying now this is going to forever be in the back of my mind if I do it.
Are you planning on going skydiving?
Probably not.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, I'd prefer if you didn't, but...
Maybe I'll have a midlife crisis. I don't know.
I think you're a little far away from a midlife crisis. At least I hope so. This yeah, can't be midlife. Like, Jesus Christ.
No, Well, that's when we just call it a crisis.
Yeah, sure. Sure. We're just having a crisis. Hey, who among us is not having a crisis every now and again, right? But anyway, you ready to get started now?
No.
Or are you still having a crisis?
No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. In June of 2013, Emma Carey was 20 years old and traveling around Europe with her best friend, Gemma Murdoch. So, Emma and Gemma. Both Emma and Gemma were Australian and were taking some time after high school to travel. Emma had no plans for what she was going to do when she returned home from their trip, but for now, she was living in the moment and having an adventure with her best friend. The pair had been best friends since they were about 5 years old, and since then, they had always been a package deal. They took dance classes together, swimming, tennis, trips to the mall, they had endless sleepovers, and now they were hiking across Europe together. They were more like twin sisters than they were best friends. They had seen each other almost every single day for 15 years straight. They said our families would go camping together and, quote-unquote, Emma and Gemma became almost like one word. We were so inseparable. Gemma was described as a meticulous organizer and Emma, the free-spirited adrenaline junkie. If you had a party, Gemma would help plan it and Emma would be the life of it. A few days into their travels through Switzerland, Emma got the idea in her head that she and Gemma should go skydiving together for the first time. At first, Gemma was definitely against the idea, but after some much-needed convincing, she agreed to go with Emma. The morning of June 9th, the girls were in Switzerland, and the night before, they'd camped outside the Taylor Swift concert, danced around, and walked through the stadium parking lot, and that morning, they would be skydiving. So together, Emma and Gemma climbed into the back of a helicopter. The plan was to ascend about 2.7 miles into the air and then do a tandem dive with more experienced skydivers, so each girl was attached to their own professional. The helicopter was so loud that they couldn't speak to each other while they were in the air, and it was also very cloudy that day, so they could barely see outside. Despite it being her idea, Emma said she felt electric as her heart thundered in her chest the higher they went. She said, quote, just as I thought we must almost be at the right altitude to jump, my instructor told me we hadn't even reached halfway. At some point during the ascent, Emma could sense her best friend's nervousness, so she gave her what they call the face, which was something they had done over the duration of their friendship to make the other laugh or smile. The face Emma made involved smushing her upper lip underneath itself so that as much top teeth and gums were showing as possible. Kind of like this. Sorry to the listeners out there.
So like a horse tooth kind of thing.
Yeah. I feel like so many kids make this face. You know, you just like push your upper lip all the way up as far as it goes so that you're showing as much gums as possible and you smile really big.
Apparently I can't do it. I'm too slippery.
Too slippery. Okay, well, sorry.
I get it. Show teeth and show gum.
Yeah. So Emma gave Gemma that face, and Gemma then gave it back. And suddenly they were both smiling. This is like a thing they would do throughout their lives. And this was a much needed moment of...
reprieve.
Yeah, reprieve. Thank you for that word. Yeah, yeah, they needed a second. You know, they're both feeling anxious. Gemma was anxious to begin with. And now that Emma's actually in the helicopter, she's also feeling the nerves. So they needed a little bit, a little giggle, you know?
A giggle and a Xanax.
Well, sure. I'm sure a Xanax would have helped. Emma grabs Gemma's hand and then turned to her instructor. She really wanted some reassurance, so she asked how many times he had jumped, and the number was absolutely staggering. She said, "I imagine that he had spent more time midair than he had with his feet on the ground," which reassured her. Along with his honest answer, when she asked if anyone had ever been injured diving with him, he told her about a jumper who had broken their ankle on landing a couple of years ago, and because of the way he was saying it, as if, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal, and he was really, he felt really warm while he was telling this to her, that comforted her as well. So he was extremely experienced, no one had been seriously injured with him, and it seemed like he had a really good hold over this whole thing. So she felt as safe as she possibly could, you know, 2.7 miles in the air about to jump out of a plane, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what, that's over 10,000 feet.
I guess so, yeah. About 20 minutes in, it was go time. 14,000 feet in the air. Yeah, there you go. The door of the helicopter opened and the wind rushed in. Emma looked at Gemma and saw the fear obvious through the tears welling in her eyes. And she said she felt a pang in her heart knowing that her love of adrenaline was the only reason that Gemma was here in the first place. So she gave her one last squeeze of her hand and then she let it go. For a moment, they sat on the edge of the helicopter and Emma caught one final glance at Gemma and said, "I love you," before turning toward the open helicopter door and jumping out with her instructor. 30 seconds later, Gemma jumped from the other side. Gemma had closed her eyes for the duration of the jump and hated every second of it. Emma, on the other hand...
she didn't even open her eyes?
No, apparently not. She hated every second. She closed her eyes the whole way down.
Oh my God.
And she made it to the bottom. Emma, on the other hand, was having a blast. For the first 30 seconds of the fall, Emma felt like she was flying. She said, "I was enraptured by the picturesque ground below, the snowy Alps, the winding rivers, the endless green farmlands. Again, that feeling of insignificance overwhelmed me, and all the troubles I'd left on the ground no longer mattered. This was where I was meant to be. Everything seemed so clear, an undeniable sense of peace in the chaos. It was like a nudge from the future whispering, 'Remember this feeling. This is what happiness feels like.'"
Wow, enraptured.
Yeah.
That's a new word.
Yeah, so she had like a profound experience jumping out of this helicopter.
Yeah, like almost a spiritual experience.
Yeah, at least for the first 30 seconds.
Wait, so are they free falling or did they jump and pull the cord immediately?
So I think from that height you do free fall for a little bit before you actually pull the cord, yeah.
Jeez. I've always heard that your first time you go up, you jump out and they just pull it immediately. This is what I've heard. No facts.
Yeah, I think if you're at a certain height, if you pull it too high up, it would take way too long to get to the ground.
Could be fun, though.
Could be fun, but that's not how it was going to go.
So you're free falling for
like 30 seconds. Yeah.
Oh my God.
At least from that height.
I don't even know. You've been on a roller coaster.
Sure have.
That lasts like what, a second, two?
What, like the drops?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine like 30.
That is a long time. 30 seconds is a really long time. When you're talking about free falling, hell, when I'm standing in front of the microwave, 30 seconds is way too long.
Yeah. Amen.
But Emma was loving it. This was her first skydive, but she was feeling like this wouldn't be her last. After that 30-second mark, she felt a tap on her shoulder, which was a signal from her instructor to cross her arms and brace for the jolt of the chute going off. So she crossed her arms and waited, but nothing happened. At first, Emma didn't think much of it. From that height, everything on the ground looked so little that it was all just like dots. So it felt like she had plenty of time still, and the instructor would pull the chute at any second. But as they plummeted closer to the earth, she started to realize just how fast they were falling. And as time went on, it finally started to sink in that they should have definitely been slowing down by now. Suddenly, when the jolt came, it felt like her hair was being ripped from her head, and she was surprised by the pain. She said no one warned me that it would hurt. I expected my instructor to say something, to give me a high five like I'd seen in the videos online, but he didn't move. And as we continued to plummet, a sudden terror ripped through me. The next thing she saw was something red flash before her eyes, and she realized it was the material of the parachute wrapped up all in a ball in front of them. Meaning it wasn't above them at all, and it was not open like it should be. The chute never opened, and they were free-falling to the ground. Emma's instructor hadn't been saying anything to her, and she didn't know why at the time, but later came to learn that her instructor had been unconscious for the duration of the fall. There were two parachutes inside the instructor's backpack, the main parachute, which comes out when they pull it, and the reserve parachute for emergencies, which is set to come out at a certain altitude if for some reason the other parachute isn't out yet. So the leading theory on what happened with Emma Schutz is that her instructor forgot his altimeter to tell him their height and that he somehow pulled the regular chute at the exact second that the emergency chute went off, causing them to tangle. Experts have said the odds of that are astronomical. But either way, both of these parachutes are now tangled up in each other and both are completely unusable. And also the instructor is unconscious. So not only had the instructor pulled the chute too late, but the cords had wrapped around the instructor's neck and strangled him, which caused the unconsciousness for the entire fall, basically.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so he was being strangled by the two parachutes that were like whipping in the wind. And Emma had no idea what to do. There was nothing she could do because she's strapped to this instructor who is unconscious on top of her.
I don't know. Try and untangle him.
You can't. There was nothing she could do.
What, you're not even going to try? You're going to die.
Well, sure.
You're falling to the ground right now.
She had seconds. I don't think she could have even really reached it because it was coming out of her instructor's parachute, which was on his back, and she was strapped to the front of him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. Reach back, queen.
Yeah.
Try something.
Try your best. There was also nothing she could cut away because, as I've said, they were both tangled in each other, and she didn't have anything to cut it away anyway. So Emma very quickly realized that something was wrong, and she was 100% convinced that they were going to die, and these were her final seconds alive. She could feel how fast she was falling, and that the ground was coming up so quickly, so she didn't think any person could survive that kind of impact. She said it was such a scary memory, but in a weird way, she's grateful that she didn't pass out, because she will forever know what it feels like to be certain you're about to die. And how scared she felt, and even more than that, she remembers the strength and urgency of yearning that she felt to live. She remembers thinking what a waste it was to only have 10 seconds left. Right before she hit the ground, she had two overwhelming thoughts. The first was that she didn't want to die, she had so much more life to live, and the other broke her heart, that Gemma would most likely be the person to find her body. When they hit the ground, Emma didn't pass out. She can remember everything. She couldn't believe that she was still conscious. She said, "I wasn't dead. Well, at least I was pretty sure I wasn't. I could hear myself panting, and I could taste the blood filling my mouth. I was face down in the expanding pool of dirt, blood and shock. I didn't understand. How could I not be dead? I wasn't even unconscious. I had somehow remained completely awake for the moment of impact. I wondered how rare that was, to be so acutely present at the precise moment your world changes." They were on the grass in a field in the middle of the Swiss Alps. She lifted her head and saw that there was nothing around them, no buildings or anything she could see, so she assumed they landed in the wrong spot, which would make sense considering the instructor had been unconscious for the large majority of the fall. There was a split second of relief, followed by total disbelief and confusion. She couldn't accept that she had just been in a skydiving accident. Things like that don't happen in real life. She was supposed to be running over to her best friend, arms outstretched with a smile so wide and a sheer rush of being alive. But instead, she had landed on her stomach with her arms out as if she were still in a free fall. And because her instructor had been attached to her back, he landed on top of her. She had attempted to roll over to get the instructor off of her, but when she tried to bend her knees or move her legs or use her abs to roll over, nothing happened. She couldn't feel anything below her waist. She even tried wiggling her toes, but still nothing happened. And that was when her soul dropped and time froze. The equipment and her instructor were heavy on her body, and she was in tremendous amounts of pain. The kind of pain so overwhelming she couldn't even tell where it was coming from. It just felt like her entire body was on fire. She had the thought, I wonder if it's possible to die from pain. That's how excruciating it was. And she assumed that her instructor was dead on top of her because he still wasn't responding. But despite being terrified and in unimaginable amounts of pain, Emma said above it all, she was able to have this sense of gratitude for being alive because she knew how close she had came to it being game over. Isn't that kind of wild that she was able to like have all of those thoughts at once and remember them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked that she didn't. Number one, that she's alive, awake, and fully conscious. Like when you're in that amount of pain, usually you pass out.
Yeah.
You know?
She was conscious through impact. She fell from 14,000 feet.
Well, I mean, she was going as fast as you can go.
Yeah.
Unless the parachute, even though it wasn't fully open, had some impact. Like, it had to have.
I don't really know, but she fell from that height, and it wasn't really...
How do you, like, reach terminal velocity and hit the ground with somebody strapped to your back?
Yeah, he landed on top of her.
And not die. Like, instantly.
I have no idea.
Well, you're going to explain to me later, right? There's got to be some theory. Like, the parachute had to have slowed them down. There's no way you survive an impact at, like, full throttle, like, free fall.
I wish I had the answer. Honestly, I don't. Because both of the parachutes got tangled at the exact same time. So it's not like they really had a ton of drag to them.
Yeah, but it's, like, not nothing.
I guess. But it definitely wasn't gentle.
No.
You know?
No.
As she lay there, the only thing she could do was yell Gemma's name. Gemma couldn't hear her yet. The trajectory from the opposite side of the helicopter took her off in another direction, far enough that she lost sight of Emma for most of the dive. And also, she was closing her eyes, so she really wasn't keeping track. At a little over 5,000 feet, Gemma's instructor pulled their chute, and when Gemma landed, she stood up and could just make out Emma on the ground about a half mile away. So she desperately tried to disconnect from her chute so she could run, and once she was disconnected, she took off. It felt like the longest run of her life. The suit was heavy, and the ground was so soft. Every step felt like she was moving in slow motion. As she ran, Gemma couldn't really tell what she was looking at. Emma was either crouching or laying on the ground, but her instructor wasn't moving, and she had a terrible feeling that he was dead. After sprinting for 5 minutes, Gemma could finally hear that Emma was moaning in agony and yelling her name as the instructor lay there motionless on top of her. She was yelling, "Gemma, I can't feel my legs. Help me get up." Emma's instructor had come to and unclipped himself, muttering something about his legs being shattered before passing out again. So he wasn't dead either.
Fucking incredible. I don't know how this fucking happens.
I don't know at all. It feels like a 1 in a million chance to fall from that height and still both be alive. I really don't know. Gemma told Emma, "You're badly hurt. I think you should stay where you are until help arrives." Which was going to be a little bit because, as I said earlier, they were in the middle of a field in the Swiss Alps. Emma listened to her friend and stopped trying to get up and waited with Gemma for help to arrive. And about an hour later, EMTs arrived and instantly knew Emma's injuries were so severe that she needed an emergency helicopter to take her to a hospital in Switzerland's capital. First responders also prepared Emma's instructor to be separately transported. Gemma was told there was only enough room on the chopper for the medical team and Emma, but there was no way she could let Emma go without her, so eventually she argued her way into a seat with the EMTs and found herself in another helicopter that she never wanted to be in. While in the helicopter, Emma was having trouble processing what had actually happened, that she plummeted to the ground and somehow survived. It really didn't make sense. And as she lay her head back, the pain medication finally began to kick in a little bit. She was strapped down to her bed, barely able to turn her head to look at Gemma. They were both devastated and confused, but grateful that not only was Emma alive, but they were there together. Gemma then watched Emma do the most ridiculous thing she could have done. as they flew over the Alps to a trauma center 9,000 miles away from anyone they knew in Australia, Emma once again gave Gemma the face, bringing her upper lip to the top of her gums and showing off her entire top row of teeth. And that was when Gemma said she knew that Emma was going to be okay. When they got to the hospital, they learned that Emma had suffered a catastrophic series of injuries to her midsection.
Really?
Yeah. A broken sternum and pelvis, a broken sacrum, her L1 vertebrae was, I think, shattered, and she broke a lot of her teeth and had a crushed spinal cord. Emma was taken into surgery for 8 hours, and during that time, Gemma called everyone from home that needed to know what was going on. After making all the calls she could back to Australia, Gemma didn't know what to do with herself, so she left the hospital and got herself an ice cream cone. She sat on a bench and ate it as she stared off into space for a little while. She earned a little dissociation at that point.
Yep, that's fair.
After finishing her ice cream, she realized that she still had her skydiving suit on, so without much thought, she just pulled it off and dropped it to the ground and walked off.
Yeah.
And years later, she said she still laughs about some random Swiss person stumbling upon an abandoned skydiving suit on a park bench. That is kind of funny to think about.
It's just so random.
Yeah.
You're like, how do you leave this here?
Right.
Who just left this here?
Yeah, what happened that this person left the suit on a bench?
You think about finding pants in random places, right? Or like a sock, you know?
A whole skydiving suit. Gemma then went back into the hospital to wait for Emma to come out of surgery. And when she woke up, she was still somehow the same optimistic Emma that she had always been. Gemma slept on the floor of her room every night until her mother and sister arrived from Australia a few days later. Eventually, her mother and sister did arrive, but Emma was also waiting on her boyfriend to visit. But as time went on, she realized that he was slowly ghosting her from Australia and wasn't coming.
Bro, what?
Yeah.
How long have they been dating?
I don't know how long they were dating, but her boyfriend, so it's like they had defined that they were boyfriend and girlfriend, and he ghosted her while she's laying in a hospital bed in Switzerland.
Yeah, dude.
Douchebag alert.
That shit's over. Are you kidding me? I mean, figure out a way to get there, man.
He didn't want to.
Selfish. I don't know, like, what else are you doing, man? Just chucking shrimps on the Barbie back home.
Okay.
All right, come on. I had to. Wait, he's gone walkabout, right? Maybe he's gone walkabout.
And what does gone walkabout mean?
You like go into the outback for months on end to find yourself. It's like it's a thing. Look it up.
A walkabout is traditionally a rite of passage in Indigenous Australian culture where young people undertake a spiritual nomadic journey through the wilderness to connect with their heritage and prove their transition into adulthood.
Boom.
So he's maybe gone on walkabout, but I don't think so.
He hasn't.
I think he just ghosted our poor girl, Emma.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, they're like 18.
20.
Yeah.
Emma was beyond heartbroken by that. And at the time she said, quote, "If I had been given the choice of him or walking again, I would have chosen him." Looking Ooh. Back, that is so ridiculous to feel that way, but that is how it felt at the time.
That's so sad.
It's really sad. She was that low in her like mental health in that moment and her recovery journey.
Yeah.
That she would have given up walking for this man and he ghosted her.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too much to fall from the sky and get broken up with on the same day.
Yeah, you can
only... But like also slowly and with no conclusion.
Yeah, that is far too much for any person to handle, I think. And also, I feel like when you're that young, I mean, 20 isn't like, you're not like 16, but you feel so deeply, you know, like teenage love.
Yeah. Or just outside of it.
Yeah. Just outside of it. It feels crazy, man.
Yeah. Well, you dodged a bullet.
Well,
you know,
definitely. Yeah. Because looking back on it, she was like, that's a ridiculous thing to think. But like, that's how deeply it felt.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. You didn't waste any more time.
So true.
With him.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Because, like, if she really felt that way, it could have dragged on for years before he showed his true colors.
Absolutely. And she had Gemma, her mother, and her sister by her side. So, with the three of them, she began to lobby to get home to Australia as soon as possible. And Gemma wanted to go with her. But Emma was having none of that. The next stop on their trip was supposed to be Spain, where Gemma was going to complete an exchange program for college credit, and Emma didn't want her to miss that. Emma told her she would be fine, she would just see her when she got home in a few weeks. And after lots of hugs and tears, Gemma begrudgingly left the hospital a few days later to go to Spain. Emma said later she's not really a crier, so the tears were all from Gemma, but she knew it would all be okay. However, it wouldn't be easy. Doctors told Emma she was paralyzed from the waist down and would likely never walk again. She bounced back and forth between enormous amounts of gratitude to be alive and extreme frustration and anger at her body and at the world. The morning of her accident, Emma had wanted to go on a run since she was in the Swiss Alps, and she figured there would never be a more beautiful place to go on a run, but that morning when she woke up, she was feeling a little bit lazy and told herself she would go tomorrow. Well, cut to tomorrow, and Emma was lying in a hospital bed paralyzed from the waist down. She really had to take it minute by minute at first, because she had to work through a lot of emotions. She began journaling and wrote down a phrase that really stuck with her. If you can, you must. And that became her motto. At some point, Emma found out that her skydiving instructor had thankfully also survived and had been transported to the same wing of the same hospital as her. And he was also being treated for severe lower body injuries. Emma decided she had to forgive him, because for a while, she was also really angry at him, because it kind of felt like it was his fault. She definitely had moments where she felt extremely angry at him, but she had to let that go or it would eat her alive. And one day, she looked up and saw that he was in a wheelchair in front of her bed. They talked for a bit, and he was extremely apologetic and felt so terrible for what had happened. Emma said she felt bad for him, and she saw how much guilt he felt, so she forgave him. After a few weeks of being in the hospital, Emma managed to start using crutches to prop herself up. She wasn't sure if she ever would walk again, but this was a good start. She began developing a complicated relationship with the idea of walking. For a little while, she felt like she wouldn't be happy until she walked again, but then she realized that walking couldn't become the end-all be-all of her recovery because there was no guarantee that she would. So she decided she would put in as much effort as she could to recover, but she would let go of the outcome. She said, "There's a whole world out there to see, and none of it depends on if I can walk well." Very true. Good outlook to have. And finally, Emma got the good news that she'd be able to go back to Australia and continue to recover there. It would cost over $125,000, paid for by Whoa. Her traveler's insurance that she bought very last minute before the trip.
What? Traveler's insurance?
Oh yeah, that's very much a thing.
For just anything that goes wrong?
I'm sure there are different types of traveler's insurance, but yeah, I have it when I'm going to go to Italy this year.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can confidently say this would be never something I would pay for, I feel like.
Well, maybe now you would?
Maybe now I will, but, you know, it's like, oh, do you want to buy flight insurance to protect your flight? Or you go to rent a car and they're like, do you want to buy insurance from us? I'm like, no, I have insurance.
Yeah, I have my own. Yeah.
Yeah, does your health insurance cover if you fall from the sky in Switzerland?
Probably not, right?
Yeah, they would find a way to deny that.
Well, it's also like definitely out of network. it's kind of funny, but also it's not, and I'm not wrong. Like, that would definitely not be a network.
No.
Insurance is a nightmare, but she had it, and it covered her helicopter rides and her transportation and everything, so that is good. She needed an ambulance to take her to and from the plane. Several rows of seats had to be removed to accommodate her bed, and a doctor and nurse had to be at her side for what was going to be a 12-hour flight. And it covered that.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty insane.
Well, that was worth every penny.
Yeah. She was transferred to a hospital in Sydney and eventually was discharged and moved to the Gold Coast. She loved it there, but unfortunately, it was a 10-hour drive from Gemma. But despite the distance, she had to move forward. She kept going on with her rehab, giving it her absolute all, and she had been slowly making progress and was on her way to walking again. However, she had hit a few bumps in the road. Although she had been able to move her legs again, she still didn't have any sensation in them and couldn't feel anything or any pain. So she could walk, and was like, you know, standing and moving and, you know, whatever, but she couldn't actually feel anything.
Huh.
Which I didn't know that you could have one and not the other.
Yeah,
but
that's so counterintuitive. I mean, that has to be so rare.
I'm sure, but she damaged, I think, her nerves. And it's not a great thing to have happen because although pain is painful and not fun to feel, there is a reason we feel pain because, you know, you need to know when something is wrong. So because she can't feel pain, she, you know, she cut her ankle without knowing it and the wound didn't properly heal, putting her in a bed for almost an entire year. It was a pretty severe thing that happened. And also on another occasion, she sat on a bench and later noticed a bright red spot on her leg because she had burned her leg severely and didn't know at all.
Oh, on the bench?
Yeah. She like sat down on the bench and fried her leg.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So pain is a good thing. It tells you things. But,
turns out.
Yeah. But on the bright side, she was able to walk again. She's not back to 100%. She said she's still pretty wobbly, especially since she can't really feel her legs. And her calves are also still paralyzed, so she can't go up on her toes, she can't run, and she can't jump. And she also lost bladder and bowel control, but she can walk, and like I said earlier, is very grateful to be alive. In her book, Emma says she filed a personal injury claim against the skydiving company and eventually received a large settlement. But that was after a brutal 6-year court battle, prolonged mostly by complex international law and constant delays as she fought in Swiss courts from Australia. She never said how much she got in the settlement, but it seems like she was content with the amount.
I'd want 10 mil.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, what does it cost to
not be able to jump or run or not have feeling in your legs?
Yeah, and fall from 14,000 feet and hit the ground.
And then have to pay $125,000 for your medical bills.
Well, thankfully, she didn't have to pay it, but...
I know, but yeah. Imagine if she hadn't bought insurance.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's not the only medical bill she had. She had way more medical bills past that. That was just getting her from Switzerland to Australia.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully she made bank. She also said she's reached a point of forgiveness with her instructor and has fiercely protected his identity in the time since this accident has happened. She also met with the owners of the skydiving company and considered them friends now, but she keeps their names to herself too.
That's so strange. So she sued them for a ton of money and their friends?
Yeah, I don't know how that works exactly, but...
I mean...
Maybe it's not like the people she sued, but someone else that she is friendly with now. I really don't know the inner workings of that, but she's got a pretty good relationship with at least a few people in the company.
Yeah, well, I guess not their money.
Right.
Yeah, but if that were just the actual owners, I have to imagine you'd be like, yeah, this is kind of fair. Like, she sure fell from the sky.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
I don't know. Maybe they had to fight it out in court, I'm sure, to prove it was their fault. But it was also like 1 in a million chance.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a tough one. Over the years, she's talked about her story a ton of different times, although she has always kept it tightly focused on herself. And part of her reasoning is because it seems to empower her agency over her trauma. And she said, quote, "I would never reveal their names. I know the impact the accident had on them, and I don't want them to go through any more," which is kind.
Yeah. She seems like a good person.
Yeah. She also wrote a book about her survival and has done some public speaking about her journey as well. And she has gone back to Switzerland to the scene of the accident in 2018 and took a month-long trip to Antarctica and went hot air ballooning with 6 friends. She and Gemma also decided to take a redemption trip back to Switzerland and redo their trip the way they planned it, but never got to do. So she went back there twice, but the second time she was with Gemma and like redid the entire trip.
And they didn't go skydiving? Can I make that point clear? Did they actually go skydiving again? Did they do a redemption trip and a replay?
I don't think they went skydiving,
but... Did they pwned a replay in Switzerland skydiving?
I could be misremembering. I'm going to keep reading, but I don't think they went skydiving, but they did go to like the field.
Yeah.
In June of 2023, they both ended up back in the field in Switzerland, and they celebrated instead of waiting for an emergency helicopter together. The field was green and lush, which most likely played a role in providing at least a little bit of cushion for Emma when she fell. MIT engineering professor Dr. Pico Hosoi estimates that Emma likely fell at a rate of 30 to 60 miles per hour because the massive amounts of fabric slowed her from peak speeds of 125 or more.
Oh, so, wow. I was right.
Congratulations.
You gave me all that pushback. And okay. At the end of the day, MIT says I was right.
Congratulations. But even 45 to 60 miles per hour is the equivalent of jumping off of the 10th or 11th floor of a building.
Oh.
If you hit the ground at 45 to 60 miles per hour, that's a car accident.
Yeah, but it's not getting hit by a building.
That's true. Getting hit by a building.
You know, well.
Like getting hit by a car is, you know, I know
I'm
what you're
just
saying.
Just like you got hit by the earth. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
I'm trying to make a point about size.
No, totally.
Could you imagine getting hit by that round ball that we call Earth? Got downgraded to like an SUV.
That's true. That's pretty substantial downgrade. But even though it's still like kind of the equivalent of getting hit by a car, it's still amazing that she survived it because...
Well, she got hit by a car on every inch of her body at the same time.
Right.
With somebody at her back.
Yeah. And she landed face down in the field. With her arm still out. God. Like, I really don't even know how anyone could survive that, even with...
Did she shatter her skull or no?
No, I don't think so.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
She have a concussion? She had to be
concussed.
Oh,
she must have had a concussion.
Oh, my God. But at least she was coherent.
Yeah.
She was awake conscious. The whole time. It's just, it's so... The whole thing is so bizarre.
It really is. And when she went back, she also learned that there was another reason why she shouldn't have survived that day. So she went back to the skydiving place all those years later, and they immediately recognized her when she walked through the door, which she wasn't really expecting. But when they did, she was like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, I was the person who almost died in, like, the crazy accident. But anyway, they told her that the field that she landed in was normally filled with cows. But that morning, for some reason, the farmer had moved the cows to a different field, which apparently is something he never did. And that is significant because in Switzerland, the cows are apparently so loud and territorial that if anyone was to enter their fields, even just walking into a field, they would trample you to death.
Really?
Apparently.
I have found this to not be the case. And I did go to Switzerland and I did hike the Alps and I did see the cows.
Maybe there were certain cows.
There were like three or four of them.
Maybe
I thought they
not-
had one cow. It was they're like light brown.
Oh, the Highland cows?
We pet them.
Hey, so I don't have the official answer. I just know that maybe these specific cows were extremely territorial because the skydiving instructor guy was like, you should be dead. These cows are extremely territorial and they would have trampled you.
Damn.
So I think he would probably know.
Probably, but I can't believe these cows are a problem.
Yeah.
Like that.
Maybe when they're in like a big group, because you saw scattered cows.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, they're like, they behave badly once they get into groups. Yeah, it makes sense. Could you imagine you survive a skydiving accident and you get your death via cow?
Right. Yeah, Emma, when she heard that, burst out laughing because she couldn't imagine how insane it would be to survive a parachuting accident and then die by being trampled in a field.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But I mean, thank God, you know, shit just happens.
Yeah.
You get lucky.
She got so lucky for being so unlucky, which
every
we always
time.
Bring
every
it back,
time.
Right?
Yep.
It's been a while since we've said it, but this really warrants it, I think.
Yeah, well, is there any other way to describe it, truly,
no.
You know?
She and Gemma still talk nearly every day, even with the distance between them, and Emma said she has a completely different appreciation for life after this accident, and also appreciation for her body and all it could do. At 20, she only ever looked at her body as an object, and she only cared about the aesthetics and looks, but never really appreciated all it could do for her. But now she really does. She said laying in that field, she couldn't have cared less what her body looked like. All she wanted to do was stand up and run over to Gemma. She also recognizes how lucky she was to not lose the ability to use her hands. Because being in the spinal ward of the hospital, she saw so many people who had become quadriplegic and had no use of their bodies from the neck down. And before then, she hadn't even thought about losing her hands or her arms. going through this experience was a really insane reminder for her to just be so grateful for what she does have and that her body does function. Even though there are now differences from what she was like before, she can still walk and she has the use of her hands and her arms. And it's things like that that you really don't think about on the day to day. Like, you really take the use of like your hands and legs and, you know, whatever for granted when you aren't in a scenario where you could potentially lose them.
Oh, yeah. Also, if you told me that I had to hit the ground from a skydiving accident, but afterwards I'd still have all the function that she does, I'd be like, yeah, I guess that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's just a really good reminder, you know, to be grateful for your body. Because in this society and this world, we're so focused on the looks and the aesthetics and how skinny can you be and blah, blah, blah. Do I look like this influencer and blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, well, no one's happy.
Yeah,
no one's happy with what they got.
It's a nightmare. But it is a really good reminder that like our bodies are incredible, you know? And it's something to be grateful for.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, don't go testing it though, you know? Yeah. Don't go falling out.
Yeah, maybe.
So appreciate the hand, the finger.
I just liked the message.
It's a good message. I also really liked her, if you can, you must.
Yeah, I also like that. I also really like that. When she was in the hospital, she had this goal of running a marathon because she loved to run before the accident. And she told herself if she could ever run again, then she would run a marathon. And she can't run anymore because of the loss of use of her calf muscles. But she had the realization that she didn't necessarily have to run a marathon. She could walk it. And she's going to do it as a fundraising effort for the Perry Cross Foundation, who are working toward a cure for spinal cord injuries. She said she's so lucky to get this opportunity again, and she's walking for those who can't.
That's awesome. That's like, I feel like that's like maybe 7 or 8 hours of walking at least.
Walking a full marathon generally takes 6 to 10 hours. But her walking is wobblier than someone who, you know, didn't fall out of a helicopter.
Right.
So it probably would take her closer to 10.
It's a long day.
It's a very long day.
Does she deal with like, well, I guess she can't feel pain. Maybe this could actually be a problem.
It is a problem. Yeah. So I was watching her talk about this and she said that while she doesn't feel like the burn when you're, you know, really using your muscles and exerting yourself, her legs will just give out. So she needs to really train her muscles to be able to do this. And it's kind of taking a long time to be able to have the endurance to walk a marathon because her legs can really just give out and her, you know, stamina is a lot shorter than before. So she doesn't really know when her legs will just give out on her.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you like push it too far, then you have to like recover for a long time.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so hard.
Yeah, but she is still raising money to walk the New York Marathon. So if you want to check out her page and look at her website, it's mcarry.com. I will also put a link to it in the show notes. So check it out. But yeah, her story is amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have anything left to say before we go on to our second story?
A part two.
There is a second story.
Somebody else fell from the sky and lived? Are you kidding me?
Yes.
How often does this happen?
It happens. It really happens.
Huh.
This is a different one because it's base jumping and not skydiving.
Well, I feel like once you jump from a certain height, it doesn't matter, right?
That's true. Yeah. Base jumping is actually more dangerous.
Well, yeah, because you have, you only have, a couple seconds to pull the cord?
Yeah,
and you're done.
Much, much shorter window. So base jumping is the activity of jumping from fixed objects using a parachute to descend to the ground. Base is an acronym that stands for 4 categories of fixed objects from which one can jump. Buildings, antennas, spans, meaning bridges, or earth, which is cliffs. And the antennas refers to radio masts. So these are all the things that base jumpers will jump from and then parachute down. But yeah, the span of time that it takes to base jump is way quicker than a skydiving scenario.
Yeah, well, the building, I feel like, shit. I'm just wondering how much time you actually have.
Seconds.
I'm thinking about like terminal velocity and acceleration of gravity.
Sure.
I don't know. It's probably like 10.
Maybe.
You go from the Empire State? 1, 2.
From the Empire State, sure, but.
Well, you gotta be big enough of a building. We're not jumping off your average apartment complex, you know?
Sure. Anyway.
You probably need at least 1,000 feet.
Well, no, actually, because the person we're going to talk about jumped from, I think, like 500.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's quick. So in contrast to other forms of parachuting, such as skydiving from airplanes, base jumps are performed from fixed objects that are generally at much lower altitudes, like a cliff or a bridge. And base jumpers can only carry one parachute. So it is significantly more hazardous than other forms of parachuting and is widely considered to be one of the most dangerous extreme sports. Statistically, base jumping is significantly more dangerous than skydiving. You are roughly 5 to 40 times more likely to die base jumping than skydiving, with some estimates suggesting a fatality rate of 1 in every 60 participants over time. 1 in 60 die from base jumping.
Yeah. Not great odds. I mean, could you imagine if like 1 in 60 soccer players died, you know, from playing soccer? Like, right. It would be insane.
Yeah. Skydivers jump from airplanes at 10,000 to 15,000 feet, providing ample time to stabilize and deploy a parachute. Base jumpers leap from other objects, like bridges, cliffs, or antennas, often between 300 to 1,000 feet. As low as 300 feet.
Dude, 300, like you have to leave the base object and pull your chute immediately, right?
Yeah. I've watched videos of base jumpers who jump off of something and immediately pull it.
I mean, you almost have to.
Yeah, if you're going from that low, totally. Because base jumps occur so close to the ground, there is no time to cut away a malfunctioning parachute and deploy a reserve, so base rigs can only carry a single parachute. And instead of landing in a wide-open, unobstructed grass drop zone, base jumpers often have to navigate to tight, unpredictable, and hazardous landing areas. Which means there's a very high risk of colliding with another object like a rock face or a bridge during your exit or deployment. And main skydiving parachute malfunctions occur in about 1 out of every 1,000 jumps. So in about 1 of every 1,000, your parachute goes wrong and 1 in 60 base jumpers die.
Dude, fuck that. Never. I would never do that. Dude, these people really have a death wish. Can you imagine the adrenaline rush, though?
Sure, yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Mean, anyone who's addicted to adrenaline, these are probably the base jumpers, right?
Yep.
So on May 9th, 2013, 26-year-old Johnny Corthuis, apologize if I'm saying that wrong, was in Idaho on a base jumping trip with his friends. They had been in the area doing base jumps for a few days at that point. And that day, they would be base jumping off of a 500-foot bridge, the Twin Falls Bridge. They were filming their base jumps that day from a couple of angles. So they had one guy on the bridge filming from above and another down on the ground filming from below. So in the video, you can see Johnny climb over the railing of the bridge and jump, doing a flip on the way down. After a few seconds, his parachute was supposed to open and catch him, although this time it didn't. He immediately realized that something was wrong with his parachute, and he reached up over his head to try to fix it, and he managed to get the canopy out, but it didn't open. He plummeted to the ground, falling 492 feet at 120 miles per hour before he hit the water below.
Ooh, that's like cement at 120.
Yeah, hitting the water is honestly not a great landing spot if you're in a parachuting accident.
The water doesn't compress. It's one of the things about it. Oh my God.
Johnny's friend, Curtis Huisman, was behind the camera on the ground while Johnny was jumping off of the bridge. He wasn't sure which of his friends was jumping first, but after they jumped, he could almost immediately tell that something was wrong. He was extremely low to the ground and was going super fast, and his parachute was not open. When Johnny hit the water, the impact was extremely loud. It didn't sound like a splash. It sounded like a gunshot. And it was dead silent after. Johnny said that as soon as he hit the water, he felt his left leg snap. He broke his femur, dislocated both of his shoulders, broke his left scapula, broke a couple of ribs, and cracked his sternum. But he fell into water, so he had to swim with his two dislocated shoulders and broken femur to keep himself above water and also get him closer to the land. But his parachute was filling up with water and started dragging him down.
Bro, This list of injuries is so viscerally painful for me.
Yeah.
Both of your shoulders are dislocated.
And a broken femur.
And the scapula and the sternum. Oh my God. I can't imagine having to swim.
Yeah. Not just swim your own body, but like the parachute is filling up with water and pulling you down. So like you have extra weight on you.
Well, I guess when you're going to die, it maybe becomes a little easier. I don't know.
Yeah, the adrenaline. I don't know.
Something.
He could definitely feel it. I don't even think the adrenaline could help him in this scenario. No. Also, his parachute cords were tangled around his hands, arms, and legs.
Great. Yeah.
So after Johnny hit the water, Curtis held his breath for a second before he heard Johnny scream for help. Because at first, he's like, he's certainly dead. But then he heard him.
Right.
It was simultaneously the worst and best moment of his life. His friend was in a catastrophic accident that most people don't survive, but he was alive. They had had many conversations before then about how jumping from 500 feet and hitting the water is like hitting a slab of concrete, which a person almost definitely would not survive. So Curtis, for a split second, thought Johnny was dead. Curtis immediately dropped his camera and ran over to Johnny, who was in the water. He took his shoes off, his phone out of his pocket, his keys, his wallet, and he threw them all as he waded through the muddy grass and walked out to Johnny in the water. The water bank was full of tall reeds, so he had to fight his way through those to even get into the water in the first place. Johnny had swam 20 feet by that point with his injuries. That's
incredible.
Yeah. He managed to keep his head out of the water, but every move was excruciating. You couldn't possibly be more tense right now.
I am so uncomfortable. Yeah, I don't know. Anyone who hasn't dislocated their shoulder, like I feel like it's just it's another level of like visceral. Mm-hmm. And to, like, it's fine in the first minute or so, but then your muscles all start spasming and it just immediately becomes progressively more painful until you get it back in. And he also has broken like other major bones. It's like, the visceral part of it is so, like, just makes me want to crawl inside myself, and then I just know how painful it is.
Yeah.
And it's both arms.
Both arms, and he's pulling the weight of a parachute weighted and down by water.
Swimming, he's moving them, too.
Yeah, he had to.
Which is worse.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the cords are wrapped around his arms and legs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's the other fucked up thing. It's the parachute didn't even work for him, and now it's trying to kill him, too.
Yeah.
Again.
It tried to kill him twice.
Yeah.
The water was freezing as Curtis swam out to get to Johnny, and he told him he'd be okay. But Curtis was worried about his neck because Johnny had broken his neck as a child, so he asked him what hurt because he didn't know. He didn't want to grab him in any way that might make an injury worse, so he grabbed him by the back of the shoulder at his straps and slowly swam him backwards. Johnny and his entire parachute full of water was hundreds of pounds and was not easy to drag through the water, but Curtis managed. He pulled Johnny out of the water as much as he could up onto the weeds, but he was still knee-deep in the water, so he had to hold Johnny up so that his head was above the water. And after that, there wasn't much left for them to do but wait. Johnny knew right away that his femur was broken. He had been wearing bright red pants, which was awful because Curtis said he could see Johnny's left leg moving separately from his body in the waves.
Oh my God.
The parachute was also tangled around his arms and legs, as I've said, so it was pulling around his broken leg. Johnny also knew both of his shoulders were dislocated and broken. As they waited for help, Johnny was turning white and a pale purple color, which was really freaking Curtis out. The first person that made it to them was on the boat that had driven Curtis over to the landing site in the first place, and as they came in, Curtis and Johnny were screaming at them to slow down because the boat was making the water choppy as it approached, and the movement in the water would move Johnny's injured body around, which was incredibly painful. Curtis ended up holding Johnny in the water for what felt like hours, but was probably more like 15 minutes. While they were waiting for help, Curtis saw Johnny's shoes floating down the river, and these were shoes that he had recently gotten in Florida that were really ugly. So while they were floating away, he had the thought of, yes, those shoes are gone. And when the rescue boat arrived, Curtis was so relieved because he knew there were finally people there that could do something about this. And a woman on the boat asked Johnny if he wanted them to grab his shoes. And Curtis was like, no, don't grab the shoes.
I was just about to make a joke about the shoes, but she beat me to it.
Yeah. And they were able to laugh about the shoes in that moment because Johnny didn't care about the shoes or want them either, because Curtis had been making fun of him for about a month about these shoes and now they were gone. Also, he's like, just get me on the boat and out of here, please. Yeah, I don't care about the stupid shoes.
Yeah, I don't care if they're Jordans, you know, right. Let them float.
When they got to Johnny, he told them all to stop and shut up. And he told them exactly what was wrong and what they were going to do. Curtis said it was like he led his own rescue, and it was the most inspiring, crazy thing he's ever seen. Johnny told them that his shoulders were broken, his left femur was broken, it was hard to breathe, so his ribs seemed to be broken. He gave them all his vitals, and then he let them work. They had to put Johnny onto a backboard and his leg in traction, so they had to basically strap his leg down to the board, which was also extremely painful for him. And Johnny at that point was fading in and out of consciousness because that amount of pain it'll make you pass out.
No amount of morphine and Dilaudid can help you at some point, right?
Yeah. But even though he was fading in and out, he knew he had to tell Curtis what to do. So he told him to call everyone and tell them what happened. Dr. McKee, an orthopedic surgeon, was called into the ER for Johnny's case. And at first, when he learned about what happened, he didn't think he'd even have to come in because most base jumpers that he encountered just don't survive.
Right.
He said he would see a base jumper injury around once or twice a year. And on that day, he just so happened to see two in one day, one of which was Johnny.
Whoa.
When he came in, his shoulders were very swollen and obviously dislocated. His legs were a mess and he was in a ton of pain. He was immediately taken in for emergency surgery. They put both of his shoulders back in and installed a titanium rod down the middle of his femur and pinned it. Curtis first called Danielle, Johnny's sister, and then she called Wanda, Johnny's mom. His mother actually wasn't even in the country at the time. She had just finished her last year of welding and was on a trip to Riviera Maya, Mexico. So she was taking a little vacation for herself.
Oh my God. She's like, you ruined everything.
Yeah. Well, when Danielle called her, the first words out of her mouth was, he's all right, but he's been in an accident, which is never what you want to hear.
Yep.
Wanda wanted to leave Mexico immediately to see Johnny.
Oh, yeah.
But she was told the earliest they'd be able to get her out of there was Monday. And this accident happened on a Thursday.
3 days?
Yeah, I don't quite know why. Maybe it was just the earliest flight she could get or something, but she was going to have to wait a couple of days. She wasn't happy about this, but she did get to FaceTime Johnny, and she could see that it seemed like he was in bad shape. He was hiding some of his injuries from her, but he was still smiling, and she could tell that he was going to be okay. He was healing faster than they expected. By day two in the hospital, he was making videos to post on social media for friends and family and talking about how he might be out of the hospital as early as Monday in 2 days. In that video, he thanked everyone for their support and mentioned how he'd be jumping again in no time.
Yep. Well, some people have a conviction about what they love doing. You know?
He's definitely one of those people.
I cannot imagine being the surgeon that put him back together and then watching him record that video in his hospital bed. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, well, hey, you got a passion?
You gave him a second chance, you know?
That's true. When he woke up from his surgery, he said the first thing he saw were the ugly shoes that the rescue team did save from the water.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
How bad are these shoes? They're like a lore now.
You know, I actually haven't seen the shoes, but they both described them as being hideously ugly.
Well, maybe it was the shoes. That was the problem.
That's what did it. Yep. The parachute wouldn't open because Johnny's shoes were too ugly.
Bad luck.
Johnny had other friends who had accidents from doing extreme sports, and his friend Rob was paralyzed and in a wheelchair from being in a dirt biking accident 2 years before Johnny's accident. So as he recovered from his accident, he was also living, I think he was living with his friend who was paralyzed and in a wheelchair. So the two of them were kind of like helping each other, and they were like, look at the pair of us, like, this is tough.
Yeah, and like, you know, I just can't believe the next thought after that is like, I can't wait to get back out there.
I know. He was jonesing to get back out there and base jump again.
Yep.
And Johnny recovered from his accident within 6 months. His femur healed amazingly. His ribs are good, but he did end up needing a shoulder replacement at 27. So
that's tough.
But his life has moved on and he's doing really well. He was offered a job at a parkour field and he does a lot of parkour work and has a goal to teach and tour doing parkour. He ended up
the parkour tour,
if you will. He ended up base jumping at the bridge again to conquer it. And his mother really didn't want him to do this at first, but she realized that he had to overcome it.
Yeah, like no shit.
Right.
You know, Wanda's like, Johnny, can please. We just, for the love of God. I was like, you already ruined my trip to Mexico. You know what I'm...
Can I make this about me for 1 second?
Actually, not for nothing, ruined my trip to the Riviera. Just saying.
If you do it again and I'm on vacation, don't call.
No, I'm sure she was more like, hey, just, you know.
I value your life.
Yeah, the next one, it might not come back.
Well, yeah, she was terrified. I mean, it's her son. Yeah. She didn't want him doing it in the first place.
Oh my God, I can't imagine if any of our like close family members were doing this type of shit.
It would be terrifying.
I would never let them hear the end of it. I really wouldn't.
This is your warning to anyone out there who knows us personally. Don't get into base jumping.
Just don't tell me about it.
Yeah, or just lie.
I can't. Yeah. If I love you, I will never shut up about it.
I don't think that's fair, honestly. I don't think that any of our friends would be the type to go base jumping. They go to sleep at like 9 p.m. So.
No, yeah, that's why they're our friends. You know, it's right. Like we're not, like we barely, you know, we're not doing anything crazy to begin with.
No.
Let alone this.
Yeah.
So he did conquer it.
So yes, he did jump off the bridge once again. And his mom said doing things like base jumping and skydiving were what made him the happiest and were his peace, which was ultimately what she wanted for her son. So she made peace with the idea of her son doing these insane things as a hobby, which is good, I guess. Yeah, you know,
well, you know, I think that's not for him, that's for her.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a nice way for her to look at it, be like, yeah. Okay, this is his peace and I ultimately just want my son to feel peace.
Yeah, well, I mean, he can do whatever he wants. Yeah, you know?
He has had another parachute malfunction.
Well, since the one accident. In 60, you know,
or one in 1,000 for parachute malfunctions. So he had one instance where he was skydiving and he had to cut away his first parachute and use the reserve because the first one got all tangled. But he said he preps for the emergency procedure in his mind before a jump as if he's going to be using them. So in his mind, as he's like going up in the plane, he's going through the procedure of the emergency procedure as if he's going to use it. And then when he doesn't have to use it, he's pleasantly surprised.
It's actually a great mindset.
Yeah. So he was ready for it. He cut it away and he pulled his reserve and he was totally fine and he wasn't shaken by it at all.
That's super smart. Bro, they should teach that. So like you're just mentally prepared.
Yeah.
So there's no hesitation either.
Right. Yeah. It was just like what he was prepared to do. That's what he was thinking it was going to be all along, and it was.
Damn.
Yeah. He even said, quote, it was fun. I got a bonus jump on that one. Two skydives for the price of one.
What do you mean two skydives?
Like he had to cut away his first parachute, so he was falling, I guess, for longer than he expected to be. So
that's how he looked at it?
Yeah.
That's
he's awesome. Like, it was fun. I got two for one.
You know what? Did I just do a 180 on Johnny in like two sentences? He's figured out how to do it in the most safe way possible, I have to imagine.
Yeah,
right?
It's great for him.
He's not base jumping anymore.
No, yes,
he's
he is.
He's skydiving.
No, he's absolutely base jumping. He just also skydives.
Well, he's skydiving in the best way.
That's true. Know? Yeah, he's really living his life to the fullest. And now he said he calls his mother after every base jump, and she's supposed to go skydiving with him soon. So she's even going to go on a journey with him.
Godspeed, Wanda.
Yeah, and as of a few months ago, he has jumped off of the Twin Falls Bridge over 25 more times. So not only did he conquer the bridge, but...
He made it his bitch.
He made it his bitch. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly how I feel. So, Wow. Yeah, that is both Johnny and Emma's stories about their unbelievable parachute malfunctions and survivals.
Yeah. Stay golden, Johnny boy. I mean...
You really are going with these one-liners, and I'm loving it.
Sometimes it works.
Yeah.
Other times, you cut it out, you never hear it.
That's true. You would never know.
You'd never know. Yeah, a lot of like visceral feelings today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm never going skydiving.
No, neither am I.
It's not going to happen.
We can shake hands on that. Yep. I'll keep my feet planted firmly on the ground, and I'll love that.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, because I think I would like the adrenaline rush, but the whole time I would be thinking about this.
We could just go on a roller coaster.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't need it, you know? I'll golf.
Yeah.
I'll golf instead. I like to golf.
It's all the adrenaline you need.
Yeah.
Hitting that ball.
No adrenaline.
Yelling.
It's just, the thing about that is anytime I have the opportunity to yell for, I do, even if no one's there.
No, of course.
Just because you never know.
You never know.
You can't see everywhere. It's fun to say.
Totally.
It's the only acceptable place in my life where I'm allowed to scream as loud as I want.
And it's encouraged even.
And it's encouraged.
Yeah. Because it's a safety measure.
It's fun.
Well, good. I'm glad. I'm glad that you've decided to yell for instead of go skydiving. I think that checks out.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, this. My piece is when the club makes contact with the ball in the middle of the club.
I know that about
you. And you barely feel the ball through impact.
Gorgeous.
It's what they call flush.
Great.
It's what I live for.
And my piece is through scrapbooking on the couch while watching a show and drinking some tea.
Yeah. God, so boring.
Yep. But hey, I love it that way. What's your good thing?
My good thing is that I have new, improved raised garden beds.
Okay.
That I just need to put together
and
fill with dirt in order to really up my gardening game. So that's my good thing. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that I had a very girly weekend.
You did.
I was hanging out with my girlfriends and we went to the beach and we went out and we had a cutesy little dinner in Detroit, which was really fun. I haven't really spent any time in Detroit, but it's a really cool city.
Yeah, Detroit slept on.
It really is. It was, I mean, we were walking around down there and I was having a great time. So there's more to be explored on that front, which I'm excited about. And that's my good thing. And also, I just love hanging out with my friends and being a girl. Damn it. I love being a girl. Despite all the bad stuff, I love being a girl. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of our bonus content, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you would like even more bonus content for free, Steph Today over on YouTube, subscribe, smash the like, you know what to do.
Check it out today.
I post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is nottodaypodcast and a Twitter that is nottodaypodcast, but the T on the podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.